It is awesome to be back, and actually, it's awesome to be anywhere. You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, me, Richard Lannan. We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life, and we're going to do this through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their story, their journey, their successes, to help you create your success story, to create a positive business community. Whether that's through owning your own company, working for somebody else, or maybe just being involved in the community overall. Hey, it's Set for Success quote time. George Lucas is noted for saying, "You simply have to put one foot in front of the other and keep going. Put blinders on and plow right through it." Coming from a man who imagined and created Star Wars, I figure he must have had some obstacles in his way. Often when I'm working with business leaders, they will tell me their stories about how they had to plow through issues and just make things happen. And I suspect that's happened to every business leader and maybe even in your own personal life. Sometimes you just have to plow through things. So that's the quote for the day. And I encourage you to just keep going, to plow through things and get things happening. Could you imagine living in one city, uprooting and moving to another city without a job or family? A complete start over? Maybe just because friends lived in that other city and that special someone might have been there also. That's always a possibility. People do it all the time. They throw caution in the wind and they seek for greener pastures. Pastures. Is that the word? Pastures? Pastures, I think is the word I'm looking for. I think I'm starting to quote my ancestors, or at least my dad anyway, throwing caution in the wind. Hey, Richard, you're just throwing caution in the wind right now. Why are you going off to do that? I'm one of those people who have jumped from city to city, and I like it when I meet other people who have jumped from city to city too and started something new. And periodically, I do have a business guest on the show that has decided to move on, give Winnipeg a try. And as it turns out, they find themselves in a whole lot of personal and business success. I think my guest today is that person. Please welcome to the show, Monica. Monica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Monica, didn't use your last name, so I should use that, but go for it yourself.
It's Monica Kessler.
Monica Kessler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually knew that, but I actually like to allow my guests to say their own last name. It's a bit of a thing with me. Sometimes I mess up people's last names.
Oh, I get it. I mess up people's names all the time. So
I had this last couple of days. Actually, yesterday I was working with a group of international students.
Yeah.
And they're new to the country and with business fundamentals. And boy, oh boy, it was just like
oh my gosh.
It was a lesson in how to pronounce names. And I felt myself apologizing all the time.
Oh, I feel your pain in that regard,
I do wonder, you know, how that actually impacts business people in today's life because of the changing nature of our country. So,
of course,
maybe we can talk about that a little bit. But first things first, Monica, tell us a little bit about yourself because you are a person that sort of moved from one city and moved to another and sort of created a whole new success story for yourself.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny actually. I was thinking about my story when we chatted, like when you first contacted me, and it was a funny thing because I was thinking back to my university days. I was sitting in one of my international marketing classes, and I remember thinking, we were looking at a map of Canada, which wasn't the first time I've seen a map of Canada, but there was Winnipeg, and all of a sudden it stuck out to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, who moves to Winnipeg? I'm from Calgary. And so I'm like, who moves to Winnipeg? And in the same kind of week or 2 week span, someone came up to me and said, hey, do you want to join an entrepreneurial class? And I'm like, entrepreneur? No, who would want to start their own business? Like, so it's kind of funny where you kind of start and where you end or on your journey. Like it's just two
different places. Never know. You just never know.
Exactly.
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's funny you would say that because I ended up in Winnipeg in 1977.
Okay.
Right. But I ended up by happen chance. I came for a 2 week visit.
Yeah.
And I stayed 10 years. That's the first time.
So
that's
funny.
The first time.
Really?
How I ended up in Winnipeg was I joined some people here that actually threw a dart at a map and it landed in Winnipeg.
Wow. So well thought out plan.
Was a well thought out plan. And it's just one of those things. And you know what? I've never looked back. Great culture, amazing. Great city and everything.
You know what? It really is. And that was one of the big things for me when I thought of Winnipeg. I'd already been here for a few months and then I went back to Calgary, finished off my degree and then said, okay, where am I going to start? And so I figured Calgary was a little bit more of a young person city. So I knew that if I failed in Winnipeg, I could always go back to Calgary. Right? I know. Isn't that
terrible? That was a big plan, eh?
It was a really well thought out one. But at least for me, that provided a bit of security for me.
You always had a place to go to.
Well, exactly. And knowing that, hey, if things don't work out in Winnipeg, I'm not going to be homeless and I'm not going to be without anything.
Yeah.
So it was kind of I think that's kind of how I approach any type of risk. It's always calculated. It's always like, what's my backup plan? Like, if that doesn't work, cool. That's okay. What am I going to do instead?
So you were in school. So how many years ago was it that you came to Winnipeg?
Oh, I'm not 15. Supposed to ask that. 15, yeah, exactly. It's like asking my age, Richard. Please.
No.
Just joking. No, it was about 15 years.
You made the reference of being younger. So so at one point in time. So that would have been roughly in the 90s sometimes.
Yeah. Early 2000s. So early I moved 2000? Out to Winnipeg when I was 20.
Years.
Yeah. 2003.
Yeah, yeah. You're just about to say your age.
I was about to say, wait a second.
I wasn't asking that.
No, not ashamed at all. Yeah.
So you came to Winnipeg, but you didn't have a job or anything, did you?
No, I didn't. And so that was one of the reasons why I said kind of the thought of, I'll try out in Winnipeg, see what happens. So I came out here, I lived with a friend for a little while, and then in trying to find a job, and I found a temp job, so with a temp agency.
Yeah, you start somewhere.
Yeah, and I did that for a few months and found out that wasn't quite my calling, and then I found a job with a marketing company, which is what I always wanted to do, and I started working with them for a few months, and that kind of led me to my next job, which actually I really think was kind of foundational to what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And that was with EQ3, and we...
What's an
EQ3? EQ3, they're a division of Palliser Furniture, and
okay.
So they sell modern contemporary furniture, and so I got a job with an amazing guy who I consider a mentor, and he kind of led the way for me to learn about design, sales, corporate sales, this whole avenue that I'd never explored before. And in that, I would say that kind of launched my whole affinity for design, which has kind of led me in part from both real estate, obviously, and home staging, and kind of birthed that in me. So
yeah,
it's kind of neat.
You moved into real estate and then home staging after all that experience.
Yeah.
You mentioned, I want to go back to the marketing job. When you said you had a marketing job, what exactly were you doing in that marketing job?
Well, I did sales for, it was a company that did a lot of kind of website and website development. It was a smaller marketing firm in general. And so I did sales for them. So I was going out there and trying to get jobs. And once we landed the jobs, kind of helped prepare a whole package for them to help them actually promote their product or services a little bit better. So.
Okay. So that, and that's going back, obviously, a few years, maybe more than a decade now.
Yeah.
But that
thank you for reminding me, Richard.
Well, I'm just putting some context around it because one of the things I've noticed with you is you, in my opinion, and I know we haven't fully gotten into everything yet, but you use social media really well.
Yeah.
So you developed a bit of a foundation and you appear to be promoting yourself quite well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I think it's really important with any type of marketing. I mean, obviously, it's not always... you're not always able to do it in every industry, but in my industry, because it does have to do with people so much, being authentic and being real. And I think you're really able to do that with social media, which is quite nice. So,
okay. So with that thought in mind, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break, and I'd love to come back in and talk about home staging and real estate and the combination of the two. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a short break, and you're listening to Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Monica Kessler. Monica is involved in some interesting business stuff. And gee, do you like my word stuff there?
No, I was about to say.
what exactly is she doing over there? No, it's actually in the real estate side and the staging side. I was reading up a little bit on your bio and stuff, and see, there's stuff again.
Yeah, you like that stuff.
The stuff's going on all the time in this show. How did you get into real estate? What was the mechanism that got you going there?
You know what? I started in real estate when my husband and I had just gotten married and we didn't have kids. And again, it was kind of that calculated risk again. I said, okay, I have a really stable job. I'm in a good place right now. But I always loved real estate. I loved the thinking behind real estate. I loved the owning rentals and, you know, maximizing your equity, blah, blah, blah. And so I thought, you know what, why not try it? See what happens. Like I said, my husband had a pretty decent job. We could live off of his income. So I said, I'll give it a couple years and see what happens. So as I got into it, I started falling in love with that feeling of helping families find their next place to rest.
Okay.
To me, that was something that I found very invigorating. And I always loved helping people. I've never considered myself a salesperson per se.
Yeah, I understand that.
Right? It's more so you see the bigger cause, you see the bigger benefit, you see the bigger purpose. And so I started there, and I will say real estate is one of those things, it's a love hate. It's either you love the business or you hate it, because it's not, if you're a stability person, you most likely won't like this industry because it's ups and downs. Yeah, it's sure. Seasons, highs and lows. You sell a house and then the next day you're like, oh my gosh, I have nothing to do. What am I going to do? And you panic, right? So,
well, being an entrepreneur myself, I run into that all the time myself.
Of course.
12 months, sometimes 18 months, roughly what we're doing and stuff. But then there's the other stuff that has to come in, right?
Exactly. You know, and you always have to be sourcing as well as selling. Like, so it's like this business where you're just constantly going. So, I will say for my first few years, I wasn't a stellar, like I did sales, but I probably did 5 to 10 sales starting out.
Yeah. Now, is that good in real estate?
Well, actually, you know what's funny? Across Canada, they say that the average realtor does 5 transactions a year, which isn't crazy.
So they sell 5 houses a year.
5, yeah.
You better be golfing a lot or something.
You better have another job. Yeah. But you have to remember, in Winnipeg, we're the only market where you have to be at full time.
Oh, really?
Other places in Canada, you don't. So you can be a barista and a realtor if you want to be, like, whatever you want.
Yeah, you could have a couple of jobs. So you could sort of embrace this whole thing called gig economy.
Exactly.
Which is becoming really big today, where you could have multiple
incomes, right? Yeah. So now in Winnipeg, the average, they say, or at least a couple of years ago, is 15 per year. So there's a substantial difference between the two. So I was probably a little bit under the average. So that's kind of how I got started. So it was lucrative enough for me. Again, my husband works.
Another income coming in.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed what I did. So that's kind of where I got started and how it went.
Now, obviously, let's step back a little bit because I was sort of impressed with this. You took your real estate courses.
Yeah.
And how long does it usually take to complete those?
It depends on the person.
Yeah, I know.
But I was in a place where I really wanted it. So it actually took me 3 months. So I was working full time. And I would do it in the evenings and weekends, and I plowed through it in 3 months.
Now, is that a good? Like, I was impressed. Yeah. I went 3 months to get your real estate courses done.
Yeah. Well, you know, I talked to some people. It takes them a couple of years, depending. But it depends on how busy. If they have kids and they have all this other stuff, sure. I had the good fortune to be able to do it in 3 months, which I thought was fairly good, and I got right into it, and it was fun.
So, did you start off independently right away in real estate?
You have the option when you start in real estate. You can either start on a team dynamic where you have the leader and then you kind of work for him and you kind of promote him and whatever or her.
Oh, yes, thank you for putting that in. I was looking for the gender neutral term for them,
that
person, because females or women can be as successful as men
Absolutely.
In real estate, or even more so.
I would say so because of the empathy factor, which I think is huge.
Empathy factor. Could you explain that, please?
Well, I think at least I know for myself, I can only speak for myself, I try to get into how my client is feeling when we're looking at houses, because I think that's what makes a realtor or anybody in a sales position really powerful, is that they can empathize with their client in the sense of they can see where their client is at. They can see what their client is needing. They can try to understand more than what they're saying, even by their reactions or by, meeting their children or their parents or whatever is going on. You really get into their shoes and try to say, okay, is this house going to really be the best fit for them? You know, and advising them of their pros and cons from that perspective. So,
okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So my wife and I are in the market for a potential realtor.
Yeah. Well, future. Hello
you're
there.
You're doing a sale on me right now. You can probably tell the age I'm at and what we're thinking about.
Right. I totally get it.
I suppose to actually say that.
I don't know.
That was a good answer. I like that. I like that empathy thing, because I think when you're working with people, even as a business strategist, mm-hmm. I'm working with a business owner, it's about understanding things from their shoes.
Of course.
You know, and their perspective and what's going on. So I think, that's actually a pretty good response to that question.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you did your education, everything, and I was talking about, did you work for yourself or somebody else? So you went with work.
Yeah. So I decided to kind of branch out on my own because I wanted to build my own name. And in real estate, that's really important. So, if I didn't have that income to support us, and that stability, I probably would have chosen to go on a team. But fortunately, I did have my husband. He worked, so I could actually branch out on my own. And it is I would say, probably the slower of the two methods in terms of actual output, sales output. But you know what? I'm really thankful looking back that I did that, because I was able to build my own name and build my own reputation and run my sales the way that I felt it made the most sense for me.
Probably more, and I find it interesting that you would use that word, run the sales that made more sense for you.
Yeah.
So very personal perspective.
Absolutely. I think for me, I think a big motivational factor for me is to always be genuine and to be authentic. And I think you'll see that even in my social media and stuff. I'm very particular about that because I do authentically care. Mm. I authentically want people to be put in the best situation possible. So when I'm working with you, I'm not looking at you as a dollar sign. I'm looking at you as a person and going, okay, if I can help you reach your objectives in finding the right home, I'm going to get paid.
Yeah.
So I don't need to put my getting paid ahead of your well-being,
yeah,
if that
yeah.
makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That makes
yeah,
a, that
and so that's kind of sense. How I've always run. That's why I guess why I don't think of myself as a salesperson. I feel like an advisor. I feel more like a counselor in some cases.
probably.
Yeah.
You know what we need to do?
Mm-hmm.
We need to take a short break.
Of
but
course.
I think what we should do when we come back, I think we should talk about what's happening in the real estate market right now. And also, I know that you own a staging company.
Mm-hmm.
In what way does a staging work with real estate?
Absolutely.
This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success. I'm hanging out with Monica Kessler today, and we're talking about her whole experience in coming to a new city and changing careers and taking some risk, particularly in the real estate industry and the staging industry. We're going to talk about staging a little bit later on.
For sure.
Monica, I think just like most listeners and most people, when you talk about real estate, I suspect one of the questions they ask is, you know, what's happening in real estate now?
Of course,
you know?
Yeah.
So could you give us a sort of a present perspective of,
sure.
of where real estate might be? In
yeah.
our particular environment.
Environment, absolutely. I would say the first part of the year was a little bit, it was kind of an unusual year in terms of our spring market typically starts mid-February.
Yes.
And I would say we felt, at least for myself, I felt that we had a really late start. Like we started more, the market picked up, I'd say more in April-ish, which is unusual. But now that we're in that spring market, we are in full force now. So it's actually quite busy out there. Lots of buyers. The market seems to be optimistic again, where they're out there, they're going, they're finding houses. Sellers are optimistic, getting houses out there. So it's been good that way.
So often, I don't know if people ask you this question, but would they ask, you know, is it a buyer's market or a seller's market? Is that like something we're able to answer?
Yeah,
here?
Depends who you are, I guess.
Yeah,
if you're the seller or the buyer.
Yeah. Well,
I would say, you know what, if you have a really cute little house in a cute little area, you're gonna have some demand for it.
Okay.
I think buyers are out there right now and they're looking for that gem, that thing. And when you have it, it doesn't take long. But if you have a house that requires a little bit more work, a little bit more patience, a little bit more vision, you might find it a little bit more challenging. So it just depends on your perspective. So
that almost sounds like my marriage.
Whose perspective are you looking at?
Well, no, I mean, it's yeah, I'm a do-it-yourselfer vision.
Yeah.
I can see 10 years into
of course,
a home, right?
I love that.
And sometimes I think my spouse, whom I love very much, may not see the same thing,
of
right?
Course,
and
yeah.
And so it's almost like you explained, it's almost like there's two sides to the coin, and
yep.
it's sort of your perspective, and one person can have one perspective, another person can have another perspective
absolutely.
On the same type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that was even worth saying.
Sure. Well, it's funny when you're working with the clients that are like that, right?
Yeah.
Like one can see this beautiful mansion out of like a total TLC house.
Yeah.
And the other one's like, not going to happen.
I ain't living through that 5 years again.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So, and again, I think it just depends on what's going on in your life and what you're looking for. Is there an average price right now? Is that something you can actually answer? Or is there maybe it's a range?
More of a range. I'd probably say anywhere between the 285 to the 305 is kind of our average in Winnipeg. And that
okay.
would get you probably like 1,000 square foot, 1,200 square foot bungalow.
Yeah.
Kind of in some of the gooder areas.
That's
English.
Okay. We got gooder areas, better areas, bester areas.
Yeah,
we can play with our words here.
Yeah, no.
When you talk about better areas and stuff, I'm curious, are you talking about certain areas of the city?
Some of them that are more high demand.
Yeah, more popular. Maybe
yeah.
that's a better word, popular. What
of
are
course.
The popular neighborhoods? Even I'm curious.
I would say Old St. Vitale, St. Boniface,
okay. Yeah, okay.
River Heights.
Always popular, right?
It's such a beautiful area, so
yeah.
I totally get it. Some pockets of Charleswood, North Kildonan, things by the river, Wildwood,
yeah.
those kind of areas.
Yeah.
Those are always very high demand areas.
What makes an area a high demand area?
I think it's the lifestyle around it, right? Like, what do you have in and around it? Some of the areas that are by the river, people love the trails. People love that the commutes are short.
Hmm.
They love the trees. That's a big thing.
Big
Everyone
trees,
loves
yeah.
the big old trees that we have here in Winnipeg, which is quite lovely. So,
okay. So now that makes a lot of sense. So I want to sort of throw this bit back to you because
mm-hmm.
we were talking about this during the break. And,
right.
What are some of the questions that a client could ask you or should ask you?
Well, when you're talking, I guess if you're talking from the buyer's perspective, I think a lot of that question comes up. Hey, is it a buyer's buyer's market or is it a seller's market? And of course, when you're buying, you want to be in a buyer's market where you have lots of options. The market's slower. You're not getting into bidding wars. But I would say most buyers, when I'm working with them, they're most worried about getting into a bidding war because nobody, who wants to overpay for a property?
Nobody wants to overpay for a property.
Exactly. And I think one of the things to reassure them is as your realtor, I'm here to help you not do that. Now, if you fall in love with a house and you're like, I'll overpay, not much I can do to help you there.
Well, but I guess you got to keep it in perspective because if you're going to buy the house and live there for 30 years,
of course,
that's one thing.
And that's actually an excellent point. And this is something I always discuss with my new clients is I say, how long do you want to be in this next house? Is it a 2-year house or is it a 10-year house or is it a 30-year house?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that does affect. So if we have to go into a bidding war and this is a 30-year house for you, you can see your family growing here. And obviously life can change and whatever.
All sorts of things can go happen. You can't predict it
exactly. Right? Yeah. But if this is a 30-year house and you have to pay maybe a smidge more to get into it, but you're going to be there for a long time, I'm less concerned in that respect. But if you're telling me this is a 2-year house and you are bidding this house up to a point where in 2 years when you go to sell it, you're not even going to cover your costs to sell it or get any equity, then I will direct you in a different way and just say, hey, just consider this. And I think that's really important to communicate to your realtor. How long do you plan on being in this house? Obviously, taking into consideration that life could change at any point, but just longevity-wise, planning-wise, how long do you want to be there? Because it'll really help.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good point. I mean, with any, because a house is, in many respects, as a house, it's an investment.
Yep.
Okay? Mm-hmm. As a home, it's an investment of the heart.
Exactly.
And these are two different things, right? And I think sometimes people get those things mixed up. And so if you're looking at it as part of just a straight investment or about your family and everything, then it has a long-term value to it.
Of course.
Similar to investing in having a diversified portfolio. Mm-hmm. Are you playing the long game or the short game?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it'll affect how you make decisions on that person.
On that side. Right? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that what the buyers might ask or a discussion you might have. What about on the supplier side?
On the seller side, I think the biggest question I get is how to best prep your home. And often, what's the best strategy in selling your home, right? So I think that's the biggest question I get. And that's what I love about what I do, because I both understand the staging side of things as well as the real estate side of things. And I walk buyers physically through houses all the time. I have a real good perspective of that. When I walk through a seller's house, I can pinpoint for you exactly what I as a realtor would notice and what I would pinpoint to my buyers. So I'm going to tell you to address that. Yeah. And so I love that part of my job because I can clearly identify the things that are going to be of concern. And a lot of people are like, well, when it comes to disclosures, if they've had water in their basement or if they've had, you know, some sort of roof leakage, oftentimes sellers are a bit concerned about disclosing that because it might turn people off. I love disclosing those things. I know it sounds weird, especially if you've addressed those issues. So if your roof was leaking and you changed the shingles, why not disclose it? That's fantastic. You've been taking care of your property and we can now show that to a buyer. So I always tell my sellers, you know, if there's an issue, deal with it. And then if you have to disclose it, it's not a problem because you've dealt with it. And as a buyer's realtor, I appreciate that because then I know no house is perfect and no house is without faults and no house ever goes that it doesn't need maintenance. So I want to know that you're maintaining your property as a buyer's agent. So as a seller's agent, I want to make sure that we're unfolding that information for buyers as well.
That's excellent. So you mentioned about staging, because I know you have a bit of background on staging too.
Yeah.
I suspect that most people have no idea how to stage their home for sale. Now you can tell me I'm wrong.
Of course, yeah.
But I know that you get into staging and everything too. The staging really provide value to the selling side of the home?
That's actually a very good question because I always find this funny. So I'll meet with a seller, we'll go through what they need to change, what they need to eliminate, how to declutter, and then we'll come in and we'll stage the house for them. And what I always find funny is that, you know, before we staged, they thought that their house was worth $300. After we staged, they think their house is worth $350. Well, no, because that furniture doesn't stay with the house. But what it does is it gives you the best chance to present your house, right? So if there is that value, so if that $300,000 home could potentially be a $320,000 house, staging is going to help bring that out. So in terms of adding value, that's how staging adds value, is it helps buyers envision their home at its best perspective. And I think that's really what gives staging the power that it does. As well, I mean, you know as well as I do, your first impression is the
last thing impression.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And so we want to make sure that you're pricing your house properly, that you're presenting it properly, and that we're exposing it properly. And that's what staging does. So
we're going to take a short break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about staging. And then I got some questions for you. It's Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Yes, you're hanging out with Richard Land for Set for Success. And I'm hanging out with you right now with Monica Kessler. And Monica is in the real estate / staging game. Mm-hmm. Just before the break, we were talking about staging, the value of staging would bring. I'm curious, okay, this is maybe a question for myself, but does staging help sell a house faster?
I think so, because I help it. My big thing is I always like to add color to a space. So I tell people to neutralize their house and then I bring the color. And a lot of people are like, well, why? Like, I'd rather see it all neutral. Usually sellers like, make it all neutral. Everyone will like it. I'm like, no, but people also forget it. Yeah. So I like staging because we can add points of interest that people are going to remember. Because sometimes you have to remember, some buyers have seen 5 or 6 houses in one go.
Yeah.
And when you've seen 5 or 6 houses, it's hard to remember them all. So when we stage a property, we want to make it memorable. We want to make it stand out so that when you're going through the houses, you're like, hi, remember that one with the really cool painting and the really cool decor? That's the one I want. And that's kind of the effect we're going for.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you know what? I get it, actually, because I look at homes online. I'm one of these people. My wife laughs at me. I track the real estate and I like to look at homes. I mean, smart. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. You know, and I do it on my smartphone because it's all apps and everything. It's all there. Right. And it's no doubt. It's like using other apps on your phone to look at, you know, motorcycles for sales. Anything that I'm interested in, you know, houses, motorcycles, guitars, I look up. Right.
Right.
Not that I'm buying time just there. You know what? I think this has been great information. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you and talk to you about real estate and or staging, how would they go about doing that?
Well, we have 2 different websites. So we have elementrealtyinc.com.
Sorry, Element?
Element Realty Inc.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the real estate side of things. Yeah. And then we also have elevatehsd.com, which is home staging and design.
So they can sort of look you up there.
Yeah,
is there an
absolutely.
Email address or a phone number?
Yeah, it's info@elementrealtyinc. And it's Monica@elevatehsd.com.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. A couple of questions for you, okay? So
sure.
I'm curious, you know, and just think about this for a second. Well, just a couple of seconds because we can't have dead air. If you wanted to protect something in your life, what might it be?
My family.
Yeah, your family? In what way?
I think being an entrepreneur, that's always at the forefront of my mind, right? Is how do I move forward and grow without sacrificing my family's, you know, what's the word? Income. Money.
Food on the table, clothes on your back, roof over your head.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. Without depriving them of certain things because of my dream, right? So I think that's always something that's always in the back of my mind is I want to protect them. So
on a personal level, if you could eliminate something from your life, what would that be?
Clutter.
Clutter? Okay.
No, you know what? I think I've come to the point where I've realized, you know, you always dream of having the big house, the pretty car, all this stuff. And over the last couple of years, I really realized living simply, not to the point where I don't have anything, but living within your means and enjoying what you have. Those two things to me have been really, really important. I feel like I'm more content with where I am and not striving necessarily for things, but for quality of life. And I really love that.
That's an interesting perspective when you get to that point in your life. I often thought that people, you know, you start off life and initially, unless you're born into money or something, you go through this period of survival, right? Your first jobs, paying the rent and going,
barely surviving.
Oh my gosh, you know, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Right? And you're on minimum wage and your rent is more than what you get paid or whatever it might be.
Yeah, remember those days.
And then you go through striving, you know, sort of figure out what you want to do, but then you got to plow through it, going back to the original quote.
Exactly.
And then maybe you go through thriving.
Yeah.
You know, where do you say you are in your life right now?
Between striving and thriving.
Between
I have 2 businesses that I'm trying to grow. So that's, again, kind of the plowing through, right? And just going, okay, I'm not quite where I want to be yet. I can see where I want to be.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously we're not like starving, thankfully.
No.
But we're thriving in that sense that we've almost come to a level of comfort. And we're in the process of growing, but both companies are doing really well. So we're very fortunate that way because we know that a lot of startups don't have that benefit, you know, 2 years in. So
makes a lot of sense. What's something you're extremely proud of?
I think my gumption.
Your gumption?
I know, isn't that weird? I think the ability, like, I'm proud of the fact that I'm excited and I'm a passionate person and I go after the things that I see are worthwhile and that aren't necessarily what other people would see as worthwhile, but that I see as something worth striving towards, worth going after. So I don't know. I think that's kind of something.
Your gumption. Mm-hmm. So gumption, what's the definition of gumption?
That's a great, I think your overall attitude, your go for it attitude, your, yeah. Hey, it's possible attitude, or if it's not perfect right now, how do we make it better? You know what I mean? That kind of perseverance, I think. Mm-hmm.
If there was something in this world you could change, what would it be? Nice macro question.
That's a great question. What would it be that I would change? I'm not too sure, actually.
Oh, I'm going to make you think about it a little bit.
I know. I was going to say. I was like, huh. I would think probably people's ability to problem solve. Right. I think for me, sometimes, when I'm negotiating a house or whatever, when people just say, nope, it won't work. And I'm like, but there can be a way to make it work. And to look beyond the problem and to not just bring problems to people, but to bring solutions. Because obviously, you have to acknowledge the problem is there to fix it. But then let's think together on how to fix that problem. I would love to see more people have that mentality versus, oh, the world is falling apart. Let's fix it.
Yeah, they can't see through it, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting. I often, when working with clients, I have the mm-hmm. same thing because we often have to go through a process of defining what the problem is or the opportunity and getting clarity on what it is. Because sometimes what they think it is, it's not what it is.
Exactly.
Right? But then I often have to say to them, okay, so you have three choices. Mm-hmm. You can do nothing, which is a choice.
It's an option.
Right? You can do something or you can do something else.
Exactly. It's
right?
true.
It's like three things, right?
Yeah.
And what do you mean? What do you mean I can do something else or do something? You know, and sometimes to do something else is a hybrid
of
the actual solution, you know?
Yeah.
But you work it out. You
exactly.
know, you think through it pragmatically or systematically or whatever the approach is.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
No, I love that. Yeah. It's good.
just my thinking. I think we all want to eliminate something in their lives. Mm-hmm. And what is something you'd like to eliminate?
Eliminate. That's a great question. You're asking real deep questions.
I know. Jeez, I always wait till the last segment to do this. Because,
Probably just the unimportant things. That's so general.
No.
But you know what I mean? Like sometimes we get caught up in the rigor mortis of life, just the things that are being thrown at us. And even in raising kids, like I have a daughter and a son.
Yeah.
Learning to teach them what's important and what's not important. You know, the things that they lose sleep over that really are inconsequential.
In the scheme of things,
exactly.
Are not important.
But it makes me think, how do I react to the inconsequential? Am I like, oh my gosh, the world is caving in? Or am I, hey, not a big deal. We bounce back from that. We do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think learning how to kind of differentiate those two things and learning to rise above them and walk in a sense of confidence in the things that are important and know that those other things will just kind of fall off.
Just as the microphone slides away from you. That's perfect timing, actually. Say, fall off, the microphone disappears.
As it goes away.
As it goes away. Hey, things do happen when you're doing a show.
Exactly.
You know what? What a show we've been having. I just thoroughly enjoying chatting with you. If there was one final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
If you have a dream or something that you envision for your life, break it down. I think that's been the secret to what I've done up to now is I've taken a big dream and I figured out what's my next step.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, if there's anything in your life, for example, if you're wanting to start a new profession, what's that next step to get you that one step closer to that bigger dream? And I think that's really been something for me that's really been key. And then calculated risk. I mean, not everyone's like that. Some people are just big jumpers. They just go and they don't care where they land. I've always been calculated. I've always been like, Kate, where do we land? And I've seen success in that. So
awesome. Monica, thank you for hanging out with me.
Oh, no problem. Thanks
I
for
really
having me.
Appreciate it. Hey, listeners, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. And a thought, a question, just email me at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.